Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business, take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
This is the Athletic Football Show.
Welcome to Prospects to Pros. I'm Andy Staples here with Dane Brugler, the Athletics draft guru. We're talking college guys that are about to be drafted, NFL guys that just got drafted, and what we are watching for all week as we move through the football season. Later in the show, we're going to have Nick Baumgartner talking about the quarter of the way all rookie team, the guys that just got drafted. But now we got to talk about the guys that are getting drafted in 2023. And Dane, this was a one to make the coaches who may have picks at the top of the draft a little bit nervous, because there's some star power that we don't know how they're going to be doing health-wise. You saw Jalen Carter, the defensive tackle from Georgia, who everybody thinks is a top five type pick, limping off the field. He's going to be out for a couple weeks. You also saw Bryce Young, the reigning Heisman Trophy winner, one of the guys vying for the QB1 spot in the draft. He came off. He gets hit along the sideline. You can tell he hurts his shoulder, but he stays in. The next pass he throws, he instantly grabs his shoulder, walks off, slams his helmet to the ground as he goes in the injury tent. He knew something was up. It's an AC joint issue. Nick Saban says it's not particularly serious, but they're taking him day to day, and he's not going to let us know if he's going to be playing as Texas A&M this week or not. So those NFL teams that are drafting high, when they see somebody that is somebody they like and somebody they think might be on their board go down like that, how do they react to that? How do they handle that?
Well, and it's especially interesting with Bryce Young because, I mean, listen, there are quarterbacks that are 6'4", 230 pounds who are dealing with AC joint injuries. But when we're talking about Bryce Young, who the knock on him, it's going to be the size. It's going to be durability concerns. And so any injury is just going to mean a little bit more for Bryce Young, even though I wouldn't say that this type of injury is specific to his frame and his body type.
Right. It's the way he went down, basically. When you brace your arm like that as you fall, you put your AC joint in danger. It happens.
Right. And you know, the good news is considered day-to-day. We'll see. Obviously, Alabama, they've got a big game coming up this weekend against Texas A&M, in Tuscaloosa. The way A&M's playing, I don't think they need Bryce Young to win that game. So I don't know that this is necessarily going to be a game where they feel like they need to rush Young back. So it'll be interesting. And Bryce Young had his helmet in the second half of that game. It seemed like in an emergency situation, they could have put him back out there. But, you know, that never got to that point, even though Arkansas tried to make a game of it in the second half. But yeah, it's with Bryce Young, even in the first half of that game, he was so impressive. I mean, watching the tape, there was another play earlier in that game where Drew Sanders from Arkansas, the Alabama transfer, was right in his face in pressure. He's so good with his pocket presence, with his ability to buy time, get outside the pocket, threw a perfect dart down the field. His receiver, Ja'Cory Brooks, dropped it. I mean, that shows up over and over. We talked about it in the Texas game. But Bryce Young, even though the numbers won't be as impressive this year as they were last year, he's still doing this amazing stuff out there. So, but it goes back to the size and the durability questions. That's something that if teams have a similar grade with Bryce Young and Will Levis, CJ Stroud, the lack of size, the fact that he's an outlier in that respect, and then maybe an injury like this, it could end up maybe moving the needle for some of these teams.
Yeah, and probably you default to the bigger guy if everything feels equal. Yeah. But it's strange to me because watching Bryce Young and watching Will Levis, and obviously they have different talent around them. But if you said pick one of those two to win you a game right now, I'm picking Bryce Young. Like there's no quarterback in college football who is cooler, for lack of a better term, in the pocket, no matter what is happening around him. And I think that's one of those things. I was watching Levis against Ole Miss, and they got a lot of pressure on him. And, you know, his footwork, when he's under pressure, it can get a little janky. And, like, you never worry about that with Bryce Young. He's always operating at maximum capacity no matter what is happening around him. So hopefully he gets well soon. Hopefully he can play. And I think you're right. It sounded like they could have put him in against Arkansas, but Jalen Milroe had come in and they'd scored 35 points with Jalen Milroe in the game. Anybody looking for the next Jalen Hurts, by the way, yet another really fast, big quarterback from Texas playing for Alabama, Jalen Milroe. So keep your eyes on him as we go down the line. He is not draft eligible yet, though.
And real quick on Will Levis, who – you know, had that a really tough game against Ole Miss where you saw some good things. There are also some, you know, two fumbles that were key parts of that game that kept Kentucky from the comeback. But you also on that game, I think you saw a lot of promising things. Why there will be some teams that have Will Levis higher on the draft board than Bryce Young. It's going to happen. And with his toughness, his durability, his ability to take these hits, but then just keep on going. And the biggest thing with Will Levis is being able to see things quickly, the defense pre and post snap, and then the trigger, just get the ball out and it hits your man. And he did the one touchdown he had to the tight end down in the red zone, towards the red zone. It was exactly what he needed to do, because if he takes a half tick longer, the linebacker or safety is breaking that play up. So, credit to him for making progress, but he's still – now the question will be, okay, if you wanted a quarterback right now to go win you a game, 100% I agree, it's Bryce Young. If we're talking 3 years from now, who's that guy going to be? And there's going to be some teams that say, we'll take the upside of Will Levis and what he could be as opposed to what we think we already know Bryce Young is. So that's – it's going to be an interesting discussion that goes throughout the year. Some teams are going to be – but betting on a guy that maybe, perhaps, possibly could be Josh Allen, or the guy
you brought his name up before I could
be Bryce Young. This isn't a recent thing, a Josh Allen thing. You know, Blake Bortles went third overall,
but out for Josh Allen, and I feel like that's going to empower more people to think it can happen. When if you look at the history of it, Josh Allen's the outlier.
Yes. It's the hit rate is very low on those types of guys that still need a lot of development. Quarterback is a very inexact science. Okay. Yeah. We can talk over and over and over again about certain metrics and this and that. It's not a science. It never will be. Part of that is college football is a very different sport than the NFL. It's just there's so many factors that go into this that none of these guys are easy to project, even a CJ Stroud. These guys are tough, and so it's something that I imagine we'll be talking about almost every show here until the end.
Yeah, and this is what people want. They're looking for that next Josh Allen, because look at what Josh Allen does for an offense. You know, and Will is that kind of athlete. He's a big jumbo athlete, and he's actually more accurate than Josh was that last year at Wyoming.
In a tougher conference.
Exactly.
And listen, we can talk all about quarterback wins and whether or not it's a stat. You know what? It doesn't matter what anybody, if we think it's, if quarterback wins is a stat, if anybody listening, if they believe quarterback wins is a stat, do you know who does? A lot of NFL teams. So quarterback's record in college, it's relevant because NFL teams think it's relevant. Yeah. So we look at Will Levis, since he became a starter in the SEC, 18 starts, 14-4. That will matter quite a bit to NFL teams as they look over the resumes.
Well, and the thing is, I think all of these quarterbacks that we're talking about at the very top of the draft, the C.J. Stroud, Will Levis, Bryce Young, they're guys that when NFL teams get them in and interview them, they will like them more. They will not find reasons to not like them because of that. And that's not always the case. Sometimes, you know, there are guys that, you know, Josh Rosen, the jury was kind of out on him. And well, you see how that went. But these guys will come in and they will not raise red flags in their interviews. In fact, teams will be like, oh, I like you even better now. So I think that's really interesting to me in this class because you don't often have that where the intangible pieces are there on all those guys. And you don't really have to question it. If you talk to people around Kentucky, Will Levis, since the moment he set foot on campus as a transfer from Penn State, has been that guy that teammates have gravitated toward, has been a good teammate to them, is a leader naturally. And so that's the part I'm interested to see because I don't think intangibles are going to be the issue with any of these three. So it's going to come down to production, potential, all that. So it's going to be a very interesting rest of the season because I think Kentucky's going to win a lot more games. So Will Levis's QB wins total is going up, but I did want to move to another position. We have not talked about this position much, and it's one of those that in the draft it has been devalued just because of the sheer violence of the position. It's running back. You've got to take so many hits, and do you devote a high draft pick to a running back? How special does that running back have to be? And there's a big game this week, Texas-Oklahoma. Oklahoma's playing terribly, but for Texas, you kind of want to see them get over the hump against them. Bijan Robinson, at least just watching college football, feels like maybe the most special back in college football. But what does that mean from an NFL evaluation standpoint?
Yeah, and when you look at it, for the last how many years we've had a receiver, probably what, going back to Saquon Barkley, we've had a receiver drafted ahead of a running back in the draft the last, 3-4 years. That probably changes this year with Bijan Robinson. I don't think there's a receiver that you say is definitely going to be drafted ahead of him. Now, maybe when it comes, when draft time finally gets here, that'll switch. But right now, there's not a receiver that you can confidently say should be drafted ahead of Bijan Robinson with what he offers a team. Now, not every team's going to be interested in drafting a running back top 15, which is where his talent says he should be drafted. But for a team that's, think they're an all-around running back away, and that's the thing, if you're going to be drafted in the top 20, top 25, you better be an all-around running back. And Bijan Robinson absolutely is. He could be on the field in any situation. Pass pro, catching the football. He's got his body type. Everything points to being a workload back in the NFL.
His balance is incredible.
You
can hit him.
It's crazy.
And it'll feel like his knee is an inch off the ground, and he will find a way to move a foot out and put a hand down, and he stays up and gains like 6 more yards. It's crazy.
He's very instinctive with his ability to string some of those moves together. It's almost like he's not even worried about that first guy because he knows he can make the first guy, whether it's making a miss or just running right through him because of that balance. Like you said, he's already focused on that second level to set up those moves. So he's very twitchy with his lower body. He can make those sharp cuts. Physical, powerful, his balance through contact. Yeah, like you said, it's something that's really, really impressive. He makes it a chore for defenders to get him down.
Yeah.
I think he's scheme diverse, he's zone heavy scheme, but there's no reason why he can't be in any scheme in the NFL. And I really appreciate how he runs the full running back route tree. So, you see, he'll line up in the slot, he'll run angle routes, he'll run hitches. He'll do a lot of things that NFL teams are going to want him to do pretty quickly. Honestly, we're going to be talking about Bijan Robinson similar to how we talked about Zeke coming out of Ohio State,
yeah.
where he could just, on the field, any situation, line him up across on the formation, whatever you want him to do, he can do that. He's not as special athletically as, like, say, a Saquon Barkley, but he's going to be pretty good, kind of like a Zeke, and he can do anything in those situations. Well,
and Steve Sarkisian using him in ways similar to how he used Najee right. Harris at Alabama. I think, you know, people are looking yeah. at that and going, okay, I can see how this translates very easily. And it will be very interesting to see what he does against Oklahoma. This is one I think the folks in Texas have been waiting for quite a while. They feel like this is a little bit of vindication, but you got to go out there and do it in the Cotton Bowl surrounded by fried Snickers bars and fried Oreos. And
from that Oklahoma defense, reeling a little bit. Yeah. I mean, Brent Venables, you know, it just kills him to see his defense playing like that. But I mean, it really,
he can make it better though. That some of that is not, it's not all ability. It's not, you can lay some of it at the feet of Lincoln Riley and Alex Rich, yeah. the former DC, but not all of it. The coverage busts against TCU were horrendous
mm-hmm.
and also avoidable. Like when you have a safety passing off a receiver to a zone where there is no player in that zone, no defender, that's bad. It's really bad when it happens twice. And you see the second time Max Duggan's eyes were so big, it's a 62-yard pass to Gunnar Henderson. He's just like, I cannot believe they did that again.
Right, right. That's well, and honestly, when another you know, part of this is they don't really have any big-name prospects on that defense. And, no. you know, part of that is the previous coaching staff, not, I don't think, bringing in a lot of those guys and developing them. So we'll have to see that Oklahoma defense. I mean, I like Jalen Redmond on the defensive line. I think he could be a day three pick. But yeah, after that, it's at least for this upcoming draft, it's hard to get excited about too many of those Oklahoma defenders.
Yeah, that is Brent Venables' mandate, is go find some people that you're going to be excited about in the next few years on defense.
And
you know, let's be perfectly honest, that's been Oklahoma's issue since Gerald McCoy. You know, they've had some linebackers, but they've not had those really good interior defensive line. There's no Tommy Harris walking through that door. So that's what they need to do. And I'm dating myself saying Tommy Harris, like that was a long time ago.
Oh yeah. Well, I thought you were going to say maybe Roy Williams, Teddy Lehman. So, you know,
Teddy makes me come on his podcast. So I'm going to, you know, hey, can you come on my show, man?
Yeah.
But yeah. No, and if you haven't listened to the Oklahoma breakdown with Teddy Lehman and Gabe Eichert, it's fantastic.
They do a great job.
But I wanted to expand this talk of backs. There's a bunch in the Big Ten right now, but I do want to hit on one in the SEC, and that's Jahmyr Gibbs at Alabama. We mentioned him yeah. before. He's a Georgia Tech transfer. But you were talking about Bijan Robinson and the diversity of his skill set and what he can do for you in the pass game. Jahmyr Gibbs seems like that type of back as well that can give you a lot of things.
And it was really weird how they were using him the first few games of the season. Like, he didn't have double-digit carries until this past Saturday when they didn't have Bryce Young and they really relied on that run game. So they used him more as a pass catcher than they did as a running back. But when they gave him chances at running back, all these good things happened against Arkansas. In a three-play span, he had, what, a 72-yarder touchdown, yep. a negative one-yard loss, and then a 76-yard touchdown run. So and a lot of that, give the offensive line credit. They were opening some huge holes. But the speed that Jahmyr Gibbs plays with, the vision, his ability to cut and go is really impressive. Another guy that just, there's a lot of ability there. And we're you know, he's only 200 pounds, just over 200 pounds. So not as big as ideally you'd want your NFL back to be. So instead of maybe an Alvin Kamara, he's a mini Kamara. But there's a lot in terms of making guys miss, that contact balance, the lower body agility. There's a lot of things that are really impressive with Jahmyr Gibbs. And I think it speaks to, you know, this running back class. We could have three or four running backs drafted mm-hmm. in the top 40 or 50 picks. And, you know, wow. Usually we don't see that that many guys drafted that high. But when you look at Bijan Robinson, who, you know, we just talked about, he's a first round talent all day. And then I think there's a little bit of a conversation about, okay, who should be that next running back drafted? You've got, you know, Devin Achane from Texas A&M, who's fascinating because he's listed at 185 pounds. So how much bigger can he get? Because, you know, there have been some lighter running backs in the past. You think of, you know, CJ Spiller was a top 10 draft pick coming out of Clemson. He was 196 pounds at the combine that year. Chris Johnson coming out of East Carolina. He was had that blazing 40 at the combine, became a first round pick.
These are all incredible speakers. Devon Achane is an elite track athlete.
Well, and that's the thing. If you're going to be under 200 pounds, you better be. You better have speed. And look, Chris Johnson had over 2,000 all-purpose yards. You know, that one amazing year, and he had a pretty solid career. So, you know, I think with a Devon Achane, if he can get to 190, 195. We start to run out of reasons. Okay, why shouldn't this guy be in that first round top 40 conversation? And then I think also along with Jahmyr Gibbs and then Zach Evans, who transferred to Ole Miss, and you know, he's been okay. He's been good, but I don't. It hasn't been amazing.
That's
but he's
Quinn,
still
Quinshon Judkins has been very good as a freshman and taking a lot of carries.
Right.
The Achane conversation is interesting. I think the Texas A&M Alabama game will help you get a sense of what he can do, because they've just been handing it to him. You know, before they would kind of scheme it up where you get him in space. A lot of times now they've realized just hand it to him because he's the best playmaker they have and it's not close. And once Anaya Smith went down for the season,
right,
they really had to rely on Achane. The question is, can he do it against NFL talent? Well, guess what? He's going to be playing as the defense loaded with NFL talent this week. If they limit him, because I always go back to when Urban Meyer was at Florida and he always had those tiny lightning fast guys like Chris Rainey, Jeff Demps. Jeff Demps was also an elite track guy like Achane is. And you'd see him, and this was back when Kentucky was bad. You'd see him, they just tear up Kentucky and they tear up some non-conference team. And then they'd have to play LSU. And it's like, where'd they go? And that's the thing with Achane. Now, if I were an NFL team, considering Achane, I would be thinking about all the different things I can do with him. I would not be thinking about, this is a guy I'm just going to hand the ball to. I would be, you know, go to the Mike Martz, Marshall Faulk playbook, and let's figure out a bunch of ways to get this guy the ball in space. But A&M's offense at this point is so limited by its own scheme and injuries to quarterback, best receiver, you name it. They just got to give him the ball however they can.
Well, and that was one of the questions coming in on Achane was because he hadn't done much as a pass catcher up to that point. But the last 2 weeks against Arkansas, then Mississippi State, not only did he go over 100 yards rushing, but they also started to feed him the football more. And he had 10 targets combined between those two games, which is exactly what NFL teams want to see. They want to see him be a factor aside from just, you know, handoffs. And so that Arkansas tape really – and I mean, Jahmyr Gibbs, the way he terrorized them, maybe Arkansas's defense just isn't, you know, one of their calling cards this year, and everybody's going to run all over him. But Achane, the way he would string together his cuts was so impressive. I mean, usually when you have sprinters, track guys, it takes them a second to gear down, read, make a cut. Like they're so used to just sprinting and going as fast as they can. Achane, he's one of those guys that he's able to make these split second cuts on a dime, and it really puts defenders in conflict. So there's just no wasted motion, and that's something that you don't see a lot with track guys, and that's really
Achane
impressive.
Is a straight up football player. Yes. Like that's the thing. You rarely see that good of a track star be that instinctive of a football player, but he is. He absolutely is. Another guy I want to talk about is Mayan Williams at Ohio State, because I think we came into the year thinking Trey Henderson was going to be the guy who really carried the load for them, and he still is kind of the home run threat. But Mayan Williams is their workhorse back, and he's been outstanding. 7.8 yards a carry.
Yeah, he's a bowling ball of butcher knives, just running at you. I mean, he looks like a locomotive off the tracks, which could be a good thing and a bad thing. I mean, he's a guy that will run over you. He's got a little bit of wiggle to him. You know, there are some times where especially when you watch the tape and you see the end zone view. He's passing up some holes that he should be hitting. And, you know, so there's some things he's still working through. But, man, he's a guy that is a tough to bring down. And the offensive line, the Ohio State offensive line, they just, they moved Rutgers wherever they wanted. Especially that long run Mayan Williams had is like a 70-plus yarder. You know, their blocking duo. I mean, Paris Johnson takes, I don't know if it's a linebacker or defensive end, he moved him across the field. Whipler at center, goes to the second level, takes out the linebacker, makes him a non-factor. That offensive line is doing work. And so Mayan Williams certainly taking advantage of it. Credit to him. But, yeah, I think Ohio State offensive line deserves a ton of credit for what they're doing as well.
While we're on that subject, DeJuan Jones.
Yeah.
He is massive. And obviously you want your offensive tackles to be big, but, you know, you talk to NFL people and they're like, well, it's possible to be too big. And so with Jones, it seems like at 6'8", 360, he is a phenomenal athlete. Like, he moves really well. A lot of times you think, okay, this guy might just, he might be too long, too tall. I mean, I got Dan Skipper's getting starts in the NFL now at 6'10". So
yeah.
it's, and then obviously Jonathan Ogden is sort of the ideal offensive tackle, but he was a freak of nature. But could DeJuan Jones at his size be able to play effectively in the NFL?
Yeah, we had this conversation a little bit last year with Fa'alele from Minnesota. You know, a guy, just massive human being, but how does that translate in terms of movements and being able to be a functional blocker against NFL athletes? And with DeJuan Jones, watching his junior tape and then watching his senior tape this year, there's a big difference. I mean, I give him a ton of credit for making the necessary improvements with his body posture, with his body control. He's very high cut. He has such long legs. His official measurements, 6'8 and a half, 370 pounds. The arm length is 36 and an eighth, which is bizarre. Hand size, 11 and 5/8, which is the biggest hands maybe we've ever seen. And then his wingspan is almost 90 inches, which is crazy, just absolutely crazy. So, I mean, the size right there is impressive. It makes it tough for blockers to get around him. And it also makes him a really difficult guy in the run game, because once he gets his hands on you, he can drive you out of the play. But, you know, he's a guy that he's playing a lot more with a lot more control this year. He's not never going to be a guy that covers a ton of ground with his athleticism. But because he's so wide and he's got this wide base, he can cover a lot of ground. And so he's playing with a lot more control this season than he did last year, which is a great thing to see from him. And he's moving his way up. You know, we were talking about him as maybe a mid-round guy before the season. Now, I mean, he's putting himself squarely in that day two range.
Let's flip to the other side of the ball at Ohio State, because that was their Achilles heel last year. They defensively just struggled. Now, that defense under Jim Knowles, the new coordinator, who, by the way, coached Malcolm Rodriguez at Oklahoma State last year, they have really turned things around. And it looks like some of these players are showing up as the kind of prospects maybe we thought they'd be in recruiting. Zach Harrison is one for me. You know, it's the old Arrested Development line. There's always money in the banana stand. Like, Ohio State always has some sort of 6'6", 265-pound edge guy. They're just, they find them. No one else can get them. They get them all. But they don't always play like Chase Young. They don't always show up. But, you know, sometimes they just look great. Zach Harrison looks like that, and now he's playing like that.
And just, I mean, the traits alone are remarkable, because he's a guy that's going to measure 6'6", 265, and he's going to run in the 4.5s.
Wow.
I mean, it's just a freak of nature. My guess would be 4.57. I'll put that out there right now as for what he's going to run at the combine.
Well, we'll make a bet where I have to eat some sort of weird thing. If that's what we do on my show. So.
Okay. Well, and if you're going to be in Indianapolis, maybe, yeah, we go to St. Elmo's and maybe some...
Yeah, I just have to, like, shoot a cup of St. Elmo horseradish cocktail sauce. There you go.
Exactly. Well, I'm enjoying my cowboy ribeye. But, yeah, exactly. Zach Harrison, look, this guy is a freak of nature. And, no, you don't always see it on the field. But the game against Rutgers, I think it was a great example. They're playing him a lot more inside as more of like a three technique where he's just bullying those guys. You know, he doesn't necessarily need a runway because he's so long. He's so high cut that it almost looks a little awkward at times as he tries to run the arc and get around the tackle. Move him inside, let him use that length that he has, that natural power, and he can create movement. He can beat guys up. And we saw that on the Rutgers tape where he finished with two tackles. So maybe he's not a guy you heard a lot on the broadcast, but he forced a fumble, which if his arms aren't 35 3/4 inch long, if they're just 34 inches, he's not making that forced fumble because he's so long he can get his hands in there. And then later in the game, he's able to push the guard into the quarterback, get his hands on the quarterback, force a tip, which Steel Chambers then intercepts. So two turnovers caused because of Zach Harrison, even though, again, only two tackles. I think he only has like 9 tackles on the year in 5 games. So it's not necessarily showing up in terms of the production and the stat sheet. But on the field, you see how impactful he can be. And that's why Zach Harrison, even though he won't have the stats to back it up, he'll still be talked about as a top 50 type of guy because the traits are just so special.
Well, you mentioned Steel Chambers, who had a great game. Yeah. We got to talk about him. He's either going to be a linebacker in the NFL or a CIA agent with that name, Steel Chambers. But he again, the thing about the Ohio State guys, they were all big recruits. Every one of them was pegged to be a superstar, potential first rounder.
No.
But they don't always grow into that. Steel Chambers seems to be growing into to fit that hype that he came in high school with.
Wasn't Steel Chambers, wasn't he in Boogie Nights, if I remember right? I can't
those
remember.
Are great names. Yeah. Those are some great names.
But you mentioned Malcolm Rodriguez. Maybe this is his version of Malcolm Rodriguez with the Buckeyes. I mean, Steel Chambers, he played outstanding against Rutgers on this past weekend. Really physical in the run game. But his reactionary burst, that twitch, and then that chase speed, he's able to make plays that it just chase him down at the line of scrimmage. It's really impressive to watch. So there are times he's a little undersized, so there are times where he can get sucked up and blockers will cover him up. But as long as he stays free, he will go make plays. And it's a really good thing to see. I mean, Steel Chambers was more of an athlete. They played him at running back, made the move to linebacker, kind of the opposite of Cade Stover. Cade Stover goes from linebacker to offense. Steel Chambers goes from running back to linebacker. And he's turned himself into a legitimate prospect that NFL teams are looking for. He's only a redshirt junior, so you know, might not be in this draft class. But whenever he is, you know, he's a guy we'll be talking about as a draftable player.
Finance major. Very smart guy, too. So he's one that'll be fun to watch as he goes forward because he is coming into his own now. And you're right. He was rated as an athlete, as a recruit, which means we don't know where he's going to play. Mm. We just know he's good at stuff. and that it took him a little while to figure out what they wanted to do with him. So this has been a lot of fun, but we need to talk about the guys that just got drafted. To do that, Dane, we're going to bring on our friend Nick Baumgartner because the quarter of the way all-rookie team is out on The Athletic, and we got to talk about these guys. So we will be right back with Nick Baumgartner.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. For their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S., and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/maze, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/maze now to grow your business, no matter which stage you're in. shopify.com/maze.
Building a portfolio with Fidelity Basket Portfolios is kind of like making a sandwich. It's as simple as picking your stocks and ETFs, sort of like your meats and other toppings, and managing it as one big, juicy investment. Mmm, now that's pretty good. Learn more at fidelity.com/baskets. Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC. Member NYSE SIPC.
We are joined now by Nick Baumgartner, one of the foremost experts on everything Michigan. I'm holding up my hand here. Nick, do you want to point where you are?
In the pocket of the thumb a little bit. You have to flip it. My hand.
That's true. You have to flip it. Yes. You do know how West Virginia does that, right?
No.
Have you seen how West Virginia is shaped?
I mean, I know how it's shaped.
You just shoot the bird, and then you can point to where you are.
Oh, okay.
Right. Shoot the bird, stick your thumb out, and you can point to where you are.
Perfect, yes.
So we are talking the quarter season all-rookie team, and I tell you what, there's some names on here that when the draft happened, I'm like, these names will definitely be on here. I did not expect to see Bailey Zappi's name on here, Dane.
Well, I mean, the quarterbacks – we weren't sure we were going to have anybody to put in the all-rookie team. We just haven't seen these guys. Yeah, Desmond Ridder hasn't had many chances to get out there. Malik Willis. Kenny Pickett finally got out there, but right. I don't know if his performance was exactly worthy, right? But, Bailey Zappi, hey, he threw a touchdown pass. He at least helped the Patriots take the Packers to overtime in that game. So, right. Who had Bailey Zappi throwing the first touchdown pass among this rookie class?
He didn't cost them the game, which I think at the end of the day was kind of like, that's how I looked at it. It was like, you threw him into a horrible situation. And he didn't. And Matt Patricia's the offensive coordinator, right? Like, and he didn't cost you the game. So that's not
also,
bad.
It was a classic Key and Peele East-West Bowl matchup. Because you could just imagine, you know, Aaron Rodgers, Cal, he actually was on the East-West Bowl.
That's right.
And then Bailey Zappi, Western Kentucky. It's perfect.
And Houston Baptist mixed in.
And Houston right. Baptist, yeah. Let's not forget. So, but let's talk about some of these folks that we probably expected. The offensive line, it really looks like the teams that drafted offensive linemen in the first round kind of knew what they were doing. Tyler Linderbaum, Kenyon Green, Zion Johnson, Tyler Smith. It looks like they evaluated quite well.
I think the one thing that stands out is Smith. Dane, I don't know if you would agree, but I mean, a lot of people pointed to him out of camp. Tyler Smith is, you know, looked like they were going to play him at guard. And then, of course, they had the injury situation. They moved him out to tackle. And it's been a little up and down, I guess, but it's also been pretty good. And, like, better than I think a lot of people thought it would be. Linderbaum and Kenyon, I think, both had injuries that they shook off. And they've been a little up and down, too. But, like, they're hanging in and playing. But Smith, I think, is maybe the most impressive one that I thought of the whole thing. The other guy, Spencer Buford, whatever. I always forget how to say his name. Would be the other one that maybe could have a mention there.
No, I agree 100%. I mean, there were, what, five offensive tackles drafted in the first round and several top 10. You know, the Evan Neal and Ike Mukwunu, Charles Cross. And those guys have been, you know, I think Ikwunu's playing a lot better since his debut against Myles Garrett. That was a disaster. Right. Then these guys will get better throughout the season. But of those five offensive tackles drafted in the first round, you would point to, I think everyone would have pointed to Tyler Smith as maybe, okay, this is going to be the biggest adjustment period required. Mm-hmm. I mean, they drafted him to be the starting left guard, the left tackle in waiting, like you said, and then Tyron goes down maybe for the final time. You know, there's a good chance we never see Tyron Smith in the NFL again, but the way Tyler Smith has stepped up has really been impressive. You look back at Tulsa, He had 12 holding penalties last year alone. He's only had one accepted holding penalty in four games. You see the play strength, you see the movements, and that raw play right. style that we saw at Tulsa, it's really been accelerated, that development. So he's definitely been one of the biggest surprises. I did not expect him to be on this list a quarter way into the season.
Well, Nick, I imagine this guy, because of his Hard Knocks fame, is not a surprise to people. But, I mean, Malcolm Rodriguez, yeah. out of Oklahoma State, the linebacker for the Lions. How much of a revelation has he been in Detroit?
I think for some people he has been, and for others he hasn't. Because he was a guy that I know Dane liked him too there in the sixth. He was one of our favorite sixth round picks, or day three picks really, of any team, just because he had those little things about him with the size and everything that you could ding. But I think Gundy just said the other day, or a couple months ago, like, Malcolm was individually one of the most valuable players in college football last year about what he did
100%.
You know, to his whole team. And so when he walks in the door in Detroit and knows everything they're doing and has that ability to just like, okay, I made a mistake, I'm not making it again. It's pretty simple what, you know, Aaron Glenn asked him to do in the middle there. It really hasn't been that shocking when you sort of unpack it, but it's also like, he's the classic example right now of teams trying to figure out what they want to do with linebacker, I think, in general. You got Devin Lloyd on there too, who's a guy who drafted early. And then you're looking at Malcolm, who's a guy in his six, who's playing just as well. And it's kind of like, that's the thing with linebacker right now.
He fits so well with that yeah. coaching staff, right? I mean, the
perfect
yeah. the toughness, the grit, you know? I mean, he played, I think, 60 consecutive games at Oklahoma State. Mm-hmm. He's one of their all-time leading tacklers. There's so much about him that fits that defense and that identity that they're going for. So, yeah, that he'll definitely... He already has outplayed his draft position. Yeah. There's no doubt.
He's been their best defender, probably.
Yeah, that's. Yeah. I mean, no NFL team has given up more points, right? I mean,
right.
it's been.
Right. Yeah.
They've also scored the most points, I think. So yeah. you know, it's been up and down. But so among these rookies, looking at our all rookie team, which you know, you can find on The Athletic right now, What position took you the longest in terms of, okay, there's a lot of candidates, or maybe not enough candidates? Well, quarterback, I think, is yeah. not enough candidates. But what position, maybe there are too many guys to sort through? Okay, there's this guy and then this guy. What position took you the longest to whittle it down and say, okay, these are the guys that I'm going with for this initial all-rookie team?
Well, we were just talking about it actually before we got on it. The offensive line would be one, but receiver is probably the other. In that, you know, we don't have Garrett Wilson on the list. He was a receiving votes, and we have Dotson, Drake London, and Olave, who are all, you know, all three of those guys are making plays. You could argue, you know, in all three cases, they're not exactly playing with Wilson too, great quarterbacks or whatever else the situation, but Wilson's been more productive. Dotson has scored more touchdowns. All of them though are making plays. And I think, again, this is more evidence that we talk about every year in the winter and spring, that these rookie receivers, these young guys coming out of college, are ready to go, like, way more than they, you know, probably used to be. But also, you know, these are top flight guys here. I think all four of those guys that, you know, we have listed there are really good. And that would have been the tougher one that I thought. I don't know. Would you agree on that one or something else?
Oh, yeah. No, I 100%. It's there were six receivers draft the top 20. Yeah. You know, a guy like Garrett Wilson, who's had a really good first four games, had that breakout game against the Browns, you know, dealing with, you know, Joe Flacco and then Zach Wilson, you know, up and down quarterback play. So, and he was really expected to be the guy. That's why they drafted him 10th overall. And I mean, he's responded, he's played well. He's also been banged up a little bit. He's played through mm-hmm. some bumps and bruises, but I mean, Drake London, how do you, you know, based off of what he's done for the Falcons so far, exactly. based on what Jahan Dotson's done, based off of Chris Olave is, he's top 10 in the NFL in receiving yards right now. Receivers, so, and a guy like Treylon Burks, he's been banged up, and maybe he can sneak in there at some point during the season. Jameson Williams, we hope to see mm-hmm. before this season is over. And then there are a host of day two wide receivers that I think could make some noise down the stretch. So, yeah, I think that not only for this first edition that the quarterway mark, but halfway through, three quarters of the way through, receiver should be one of the tougher positions to parse and really figure
Absolutely.
Out.
I thought running back was very interesting. It's probably because I live in Gainesville, Florida, and the idea of Damian Pierce being on this list only makes people who live in Gainesville, Florida, more mad at Dan Mullen. But I did want to ask Dane about this because Damian Pierce, he was sort of a cause célèbre among the fans at Florida because they felt like he didn't get enough carries, that he was great. And how do NFL evaluators handle that? Because I would imagine it probably throws up a red flag when you see somebody who, like Damian Pierce has that run against Florida State where his helmet pops off. He finishes a run anyway. He's not supposed to do that, but that's kind of who he is. And you go, oh, this guy had, when he gets the ball, it looks great, but what's the problem? Like, why are they not giving him the ball? And sometimes it's just the coaching staff doesn't There's give him no the ball.
That's it. I was taught this when I started, you know, in this business, but never assume just because someone has a certain title that they know what they're doing. You know, just because they're a head coach in the SEC, that doesn't mean they know what they're doing. And, you know, Damian Pierce, he actually had he led the team in carries, even though he had one start last year. So Even though he didn't officially start the game, he wasn't the first running back on the field. They actually, throughout the course of a game, they gave him more carries because they realized in game that, hey, this guy is our best chance with our offense. But it seems like to start, they were like, no, let's get the other guy a shot. So, no, Damian Pierce, he was my running back 6. And he went to a perfect situation. And let's be honest, when it comes to running backs, it's all about where you go. It's all about opportunity. Yeah. And he goes to the Texans where they had an opportunity there. Kudos to Pierce, who was able to secure the job. And it was a little up and down the first 3 weeks, but this past Sunday, he was at that long 70-plus yard run. But he's played well, and he's very reliable. Exactly. That's pass pro, catching the ball, ball security. Like he's not a big play creator. I think of the last 2 years, he had over 200 carries at Florida. Only 2 carries were over 25 yards. So not a guy that has a lot of these big plays. But at the same time, he's very reliable. And so I think teams really clued in on that, and you know, it helped him get drafted a lot higher than maybe his resume said he should have.
The efficiency, he's so efficient. Like those, and that's what happens, Andy. I think sometimes when we watch those dudes in college get lost, it's like, if you're just efficient and that's it, well, maybe you're not shiny enough, right? And I guess that you fall through the cracks. But like, he's in an offense now with Pep Hamilton and everything else that's like, it's perfect. I mean, they're not going to ask him to do things he can't do, and he's really efficient. And that's not, it doesn't have to be harder sometimes than that.
Exactly. So I'm curious how often this happens, because it should happen every year where the guys drafted number 1 and number 2 wind up on this list, but it doesn't always happen. Mm-hmm. But this year it feels like maybe the two biggest no-brainers were the guys drafted at number 1 and number 2. That's Trevon Walker with the Jags and Aiden Hutchinson with the Lions. So I'm just curious how rare is this that we're seeing the two guys, 1 and 2 in the draft, being basically everything those teams wanted out of them?
Well, I mean, I think Trevon Walker, you look at the Jags and their success on defense, it all starts with that defensive line. And Trevon Walker has been a big part of that, right? And Nick, I'll be interested. I mean, you're so clued in on both Michigan and the Lions. So I'm interested with Aiden Hutchinson. He had that 1 3-sack game. The other games, I think, have been a little more up and down. What do you think?
It's really interesting.
Through 4 games, has he really been? I don't know that he's necessarily been the guy that he hasn't,
right? Like, it's
right.
Yeah, he hasn't been everything. He hasn't been everything. And I think Trayvon's the same way. I think, and this spoke to sort of the evaluation that, you know, Dane had and everybody sort of landed on with these guys before the draft, which was like, there's going to be a curve with their pass rush. There's going to be an adjustment and all that. But at the end of the day, you know, they're rookies and they play with great effort. And Hutchinson, from an effort standpoint and from an all that, has been what they want. However, most of his pressures, and he has been, I think, the most productive guy amongst the rookie edges in terms of pressures. I don't think Karloftis has a sack yet, although he's close to up there. But, you know, he's been inconsistent. He's worn out some. His pressures have mostly been inside against guards and, you know, inside a tackle. He hasn't won outside. He struggled with length at times. I think there's adjustments that he has to make, but I don't think I would say he's playing bad. I don't think I'd say he's playing poorly. And I don't think Trayvon, you know, same thing with him. I mean, he's certainly not either. It's just life in the NFL right now, I think, for a rookie at that spot is hard.
Yeah, I can't imagine the jump, especially when you're dealing with NFL offensive tackles. Because you're going to see even in a good league like the Big Ten, you might see two of those guys.
Yeah, right.
During the season.
Once a year.
And it's a totally different vibe when that's all you're seeing every day, every week. So the other position I wanted to talk about, because it's got a couple of guys that Dane and I, we seem to talk about every week on this show, because these were two of my favorites last year in college, and love watching them succeed in the NFL, and that's at safety. You got Jaquan Brisker for the Bears, Jalen Petrie for the Texans, Brisker out of Penn State, Petrie out of Baylor, just guys that are always around the ball.
I think with Brisker, he's a guy that went maybe a little bit later than we thought. I thought he was could have gone easily in the top 40, and he slipped a little bit more towards pick 50. But he's been a guy that I think you just think of a Bears safety. That's Jaquan Brisker, and so that makes a lot of sense. And with Petrie, a guy that is so versatile. And we talked about him a lot in the lead up to the draft, and then after the draft. What he's been for that Texans defense has been really important. So, I mean, was there even a question for you, Nick, with these safeties? Was it just those two guys and then everybody else? Or what did you think?
I think Kyle Hamilton, all they ask him to do, and it's been, I'm up and down like all these guys are going to be as a rookie. But I think all they ask Hamilton to do and what he's been able to sort of, I guess, adjust to as he kind of goes forward here, I would say he was in our other receiving boats, but really Brisker and Petrie were the dudes, and Brisker has been the guy I think that we've looked at the most and said, like, that was a really good pick. Probably the best pick the Bears made, maybe the only so far. I don't know. If there's pretty good.
Kyler Gordon, I think, has been, he was, I think, a little overdraft. That never made sense to me why he was talked about in first round conversation, top 25. And so far he's not played well. Now maybe he'll be able to turn that around. We'll see. Give me one guy that did not make this, maybe even a guy that didn't receive votes for this quarter mark that you think will show up either halfway through, three quarters way through. Give me a rookie that we didn't talk about yet that you think is going to have maybe a better second half than first half.
One guy that he did receive votes, but I think he probably maybe should have been on the team, was Dylan Parham Vegas, Raiders center, who I believe is he playing guard or center? I don't know what he's playing right now, but he has been at center, right? He's been inside. He's been good. He's been good. He's steady. He came off the bench. I don't think he started the season. I think they've had injuries, all that sort of thing. I haven't watched a ton of his, but the few things I have seen, I haven't watched every game yet, but he's been solid. And he was really good in college. And I think he's a guy that the more time he gets, the better that could look in time.
Well, I will tell you, the Michael Clemens and DeMarvin Leal being on the others receiving votes on the D-line, explaining a lot about what I'm writing about on the in the college space right now, Texas A&M and some of their struggles. That's those guys maybe weren't as productive in college as they could have been, and now you're seeing them play very well in the NFL.
Yeah, and they couldn't play quarterback either, so that also hurt A&M.
That's exactly right.
Have you guys talked about Jimbo's $86 million buyout yet? Or
once or twice, it's been like a little, here and there. And maybe an entire show yesterday.
Well, one other rookie I think we do need to mention too, Jamari Sawyer. He had the biggest gap from where I had him ranked and then where he was actually drafted. There was 141 picks between those two. He didn't play the first 3 weeks.
Right.
Rashawn Slater gets hurt. Season-ending injury, bicep injury. The sky is falling for Chargers fans. Jamari Sawyer comes in at left tackle where he started at Georgia. Now, I graded him as a guard. I think that's his best long-term position. But he steps in at left tackle, doesn't give up a pressure. I mean, it pitches a really shutout good against the Texans. And, I mean, give a lot of credit to Jamari Sawyer for the way he stepped in like that. And it's not going to be that pretty every week, but I mean, he had maybe the best rookie debut of any offensive lineman since maybe Rashawn Slater last year for the Chargers. So
we put him on the list, Dane. We have him on the list.
Yeah,
I think we were like, screw it, put him on there because that was amazing.
Has to
like
be.
He was like what he did last week.
And it's interesting because so many guys on the Georgia defense got so much attention last year, and we talk about them winning a national title because of that defense, and the defense was amazing, but Jamari Sawyer was maybe the most important player on that offense.
Oh yeah,
last year he was like, there's a great clip of Kirby Smart talking to the team at halftime of the Florida game, just, you know, just lighting them up, and like, and he's trying to, you know, get him going to just beat Florida's ass in the second half, and he's talking to Jamari the entire time, like, you get guys up, you do this, and it was great to see him get in there and do that. Because he was one of those that he was a big time recruit. You know, he got into a starting role, but was not really a star on Georgia's offensive line until toward the end of the career.
He had to earn it.
Yeah. And so that was vindication right there.
I mean, the ability to go in and play without fear, I think that speaks to what he went through in college a little bit.
Yeah.
Because that's what it was. I mean, no fear. And that's impressive.
Yeah. Well, and you think about who's dealing with at practice. Like Jermaine Johnson was at Georgia for a couple of years.
Right.
You know, he's got
all those dudes.
Yeah.
Right.
Jordan Davis is there. You know, they're not. He'll play him in one-on-ones and stuff like that. So you've dealt with everything you're going to deal with in the NFL there.
Oh yeah. Jesus. Yeah.
Right. And just the SEC in general. I mean, he gave up one sack in his entire college career, and that was to Will Anderson.
He's okay.
You're not ashamed of that. Right. So he's a classic case of maybe just guys, scouts, maybe overthinking it a little bit. You know, I checked around and some of the teams that I talked to, they didn't say there was a major injury concern. It was just, you know, he's 6'3", squatty body, 320, you know, looks like a guard. But, you know, there's some questions there.
So he's Isaiah Wynn is what you're saying.
Yeah, right.
he's effective, you know? It's like, even if at some point, I'm guilty of this as well, but, you know, at some point you just have to say, okay, can he play football? You know, we can break down the individual parts and the traits, and does he hit this benchmark? Does he hit exactly what you're looking for arm length wise and this and that? But at the same time, especially playing now, it's harder to do that when you're talking about maybe a small school player or whatever, but when you're going up against top tier competition week in, week out, a guy like Jamari Sawyer, when all he is productive and getting the job done. I mean, at the very worst, you're talking about a guy that goes in the mid rounds, fourth, fifth round. How he fell to the sixth just doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, that's crazy. I agree.
Well, it's going to be fun to see these guys develop, and I cannot wait for the halfway mark all rookie team. I can't believe a quarter of the season's gone. It feels like it just started. But we got a lot to talk about. Nick, I appreciate it. Are you going to get Dan Campbell a Starbucks on the way to Lions practice?
Dan Campbell's got like all sorts of heat coming his way for the first time. The folks are furious here after last Sunday's
Wait. They're not after the lovable,
they gave up 48
anymore
at home and lost. No coffee for Dan yet. They got to get a win here, I think, at some point.
It's amazing how fast that comes at you once you start showing some confidence.
I know, right?
Nick Baumgartner, thank you so much.
You bet, guys.
Thank you to Nick Baumgartner for joining us, and go check out the quarter of the way all rookie team at The Athletic. Dane, we got to talk about what games we are looking forward to this week. There are some big ones in college football. A couple quarterbacks I want to see against the particular competition that they are facing. Tennessee's Hendon Hooker, they're going to LSU. Probably still not going to have Cedric Tillman, their best receiver, because he had that ankle tightrope surgery a couple weeks ago. They're trying to get him back and want to have him back when they play Alabama and Georgia. Don't think they're going to have him back this week, but Hendon Hooker can make a lot of hay here against an LSU defense that just terrorized Mississippi State's Will Rogers a couple weeks ago. If Hendon Hooker can stand up to that pass rush and deliver the ball to Brew McCoy and his other receivers, I think it'll go a long way to help him.
Yeah, no doubt. And we talked about it last week, how Hendon Hooker was, you know, really helping himself in terms of being, you know, who's going to be that second senior quarterback drafted after Will Levis. And Hooker's, the way he played against Florida, the way he's played all year, he's and going back to last year, not turning the ball over, playing smart football, getting the ball in the end zone. You know, doing that at LSU, who, you know, coming off a comeback win over Auburn, B.J. Ogilary can get after the quarterback. So if Tennessee can block Ogilary, I think Hendon Hooker could have a good, nice night.
I think Hendon Hooker might have to get away from B.J. Ogilary himself a few times. So yeah. we'll find out. The other quarterback I'm excited to see is Cam Ward at Washington State. They're playing USC. USC's defense has been a turnover-producing machine this season. Yeah. So Cam Ward will need to protect the football, but I think you've seen Oregon State pushed USC to the brink. It was because of four interceptions that USC won that game. Protect the ball, and some of these Pac-12 teams can beat USC. And so we'll see what happens with when Cam Ward gets a shot at that defense.
Yeah, and Cam Ward's a guy that I think the buzz is – there's definitely a buzz with what he could be as a prospect. He's still – turning the ball over way too much. I think he's already has like seven interceptions this year. And like you mentioned, that USC defense likes to, if you're going to give them opportunities, they're going to make you pay for it. So this will be a good test for him taking that next step.
All right. So there was a matchup in the Big Ten that you were interested in because there's a running back putting up massive numbers. And now he's got to face a defense that just does not let you run at all.
Yeah. I mean, you look at Chase Brown. Interesting story is he's from Canada. He started at Western Michigan. Then he transfers to Illinois to be with his twin brother. And this is, you know, his final year. He's a fifth year senior and he's leading all of college football in rushing. And so, you know, like you said, you know, it's one thing to do it against Wisconsin. Okay. But what can he do going up against this Iowa defense that, you know, they really pride themselves on stopping the run? Jack Campbell right there in the middle. It'll be a really good test for Chase Brown, who has turned himself into a late round pick PFA into, hey, moving him up. There's a lot of things to like about him as a runner.
Yeah. A lot of volume from him. They played a week zero game, but he's already got 120 carries. So he has been a workhorse for them, but that one's going to be good. Cause the Iowa defense feels like a good litmus test. Like you got to see Blake Corum against him last week. And I thought Blake did all right. But the Iowa defense did kind of buckle up after that first drive where they got a little pushed around. And so excited about that. This is going to be a fun week of college football, Dane. A lot of eating for me. I am so Ari Wasserman, my co-host on the Andy Staples Show, he's not covered an on-campus big SEC football game. And so we circled the Alabama-Texas A&M game early this year, and it was because of the Nick Saban-Jimbo Fisher feud. We figured, oh, he's got this whole WWE-style thing going on. Nobody's talking about that right now because Bryce Young's hurt and A&M's offense stinks. And so the A&M people are just like, we're just talking, just tell us when the buyout's $85 million. Just please make it work. And so that's all anybody's talking about, but we're introducing Ari to the culture of the SEC. So he got to hang out with a Texas A&M Yell leader, which you can listen to that on my show. I took him to Republic Steakhouse in College Station. You can see on my Twitter feed the comparison of our steaks. It looks like my steak is his steak's daddy.
What do you get, a filet?
He got a filet and I got a 30-ounce ribeye.
Oh,
yeah.
Bone in?
Bone out. I was a little surprised by that.
It was that heavy with no bone.
No bone. Goodness. And 4 a.m, I was meat sweating and regretting just a little bit. Just a tiny bit. Not a ton.
You ate it all in one sitting?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Sides?
I had a couple fries. We had a cherry bourbon bacon appetizer. I had that. And then I had a couple bites of this peanut butter chocolate cake for dessert. Not the whole thing. Just a couple bites.
Wow.
So
what a champ.
Yeah, it's not good. Since I lost all this weight, I it's been a while because I still think I can do these things that I used to do. Like I used to bounce back from that, no problem. This is a struggle because the plan for this day, we're recording here on a Tuesday. The plan for this day is to pick up barbecue on our way out of town because we got to drive to Mississippi now. And there's a good new barbecue place that a lot of folks have told me about called 1775, and I want to try it. I just don't know when I'm going to be ready to eat it. That's the problem.
Right. It kind of sounds like my 5-year-old asking me to go on the trampoline with her. Yeah, things that you used to be able to do. Not quite as easy these days. But I mean, look, it's good that you're introducing them to all these different foods, because it's living in Texas for 10 years like I did, finding out that there's more to barbecue than just hot dogs and hamburgers, things like that. I mean, that really opened my eyes, and it just expanded my horizons in a big
way. And you went native, right? I mean, you were smoking briskets and learning.
The
Trinity became something sacred.
No,
in your
I'm born and raised in Ohio, so like I did not know you know just how big barbecue could be until I moved there and you know got engulfed in the culture. But it's you know, it's something that I brought with me back to Ohio, because it was that important to me.
So. Well, so later in the week we're going to be in Tuscaloosa for the game. There's a place in Tuscaloosa, my favorite ribs in America. It's actually in Northport, which is the one town over. It's about 2 miles from Bryant-Denny Stadium. It's called Archibald's Ribs. It's on MLK in Northport. It looks like some guy's house, and it's been there since the 60s, and they just make incredible ribs. It's one of those places, you know, they'll run out and be like, well, we'll reopen in 8 hours. And that's it's hit or miss. You got to make sure you actually get some. But that's one I'm excited for him to get to try.
Well, that's the mark of a good barbecue place is, you know, they close when
they're out.
They run out of food. You know, that's just, that's how it works. Sauce or no sauce guy for your ribs?
I am no sauce. I think sauce is just used to cover mistakes in cooking. So.
Thank you. Exactly.
Now, if you want to do the glaze, like if you want to do a candy coated glaze where you sauce them during the cook and you want that candy crust, I'm okay with that. But I also think it can be done without it.
Yeah, 100%. And that'll help it keep it moist, and it's not, not going to dry out. That'll help it at times. So yeah, I like that. But yeah, there's no need to. Like my wife is a big sauce. She loves sauce, and so. But I refuse on our ribs. When I put ribs in the smoker, there's no sauce. And then okay, afterwards, here's a cup of sauce if you want to do it afterwards at your plate. That's fine. But when it's on the smoker, no sauce. So.
Well, that's what when I went to Tennessee for my first job and was introduced to Memphis style ribs, where the it's dry rub and that's pretty much it. That's where I was like, oh, this is so much better. Like you don't need to drown these things in sauce. If you do it at home and you didn't have the best cook in the world, I can see dunking in a little sauce, but nah, the meat can stand on its own, especially if you got a good rub. So. We're gonna introduce Ari to all that. I will send you some pictures, Dane. Perfect. Make you very jealous. And we just need to do this. Like before the draft.
Yes.
Why don't we dip into the Robert Mays budget?
There we go.
I know maybe it exists. There's a Robert Mays slush fund. Yeah.
Pro day road trip where we just hit up all the pro days and
pro day tour that is ostensibly about you and I going to pro days, but really we go to barbecue places.
Yeah, done. I love it.
All right. So our producer, Marissa, I know she knows some folks at the football show, can get us some access to that Robert Mays slush fund. So let's make this happen.
Perfect.
This was the Athletic Football Show.